It's your boy, The Voice, and you're listening to The Voice of the DHL. Season's right around the corner, and you gotta be ready to scrape it off the top. Put yourself in a situation where you can dominate. And the only way to do that, well, you need preparation. So let's go ahead and get to it. I am very excited for this season. I can't wait for it to start. Season starts October 18th. First game of the season, Boston Celtics versus the Philadelphia 76ers. We're going to have Jason Tatum waiting to step up and vault himself into the MVP candidacy. And then, of course, we got Joel Embiid just trying to prove that he's already been an MVP. And now it's about trying to win some championships. So it's a very good game to start off. And this is what we've been waiting for. But until then, let's go ahead and continue this divisional previews. And we're going to kick it off with the Pacific Division. And the Pacific Division was home to the eventual NBA champs, the Golden State Warriors. It also housed the team with the regular best season record in the Phoenix Suns. And on the other end of it, they had one of the most disappointing teams in recent history, and that's the Lakers. And they didn't even qualify for the play-in. Starting with the Golden State Warriors, went 53-29. They were the last team standing, locking in their fourth championship in 8 years. And we should have known something was clicking when they started the season off 18-2. And you can't deny them at this point. The dynasty has been established. And they're hoping to expand on that this season. Now, of course, Draymond Green punching Jordan Poole doesn't really inspire the immaculate vibes that you would think a champion hopeful team would have. But this riff is something that will truly test the culture of what the Warriors have tried to put together. My opinion about the situation is Draymond was just sending a message to Poole. It was a dangerous message, but it was a message nonetheless. I know people are saying, well, Draymond was about to go crazy, but the wall caught him and kind of stopped Draymond from going crazy. But I really think, though, if Draymond had totally flashed on Poole, that there would have been more than a single punch thrown, wall or not. So it seemed like Draymond hit him and then just tried to grab him and hem him up, you know, just let him know, don't say what you said, don't mess with me, whatever, you know, type of deal. But Draymond's mom summarized it best when she tweeted, "That wasn't a sucker punch. Draymond didn't aggressively go to Poole." I don't really agree with that part. His hands were down. Facts. Man to man, you go over there and talk to ask, "What's up? What you say?" Facts again. Got shoved and reacted. Facts. End of story. So that's what she tweeted. And I think there's a lot of truth to that tweet. Even if Poole hasn't been in a lot of fights in his life, he should have known better. And I get it. The last time I got in a fist fight with a friend, I was probably 12 or 13. I lost to my boy Ivan. We were talking trash. I felt like I got some good hits in, but I didn't win the fight, so it don't even matter. But either way, I couldn't imagine fist fighting with a homie at my age now. But let's say I'm talking big shit to Varus. He's a guy in our group that's really good at not letting himself get riled up, but somehow I just strike that nerve, and he comes over to check me, and I forcibly push him away. Now, granted, Varus might not hit me, but I'm willing to wager that his army training kicks in and just off of instinct, he tries to grapple me to the ground until I calm down or tap out or something like that. The point that I'm trying to make is that Jordan should have expected a reaction after pushing Draymond. Last thing about this, we've heard Kobe and Shaq fought and they still won rings. The year Jordan and Steve Kerr fought, the Bulls went 73-9. I know those scenarios are both different because in each instance, both players were able to throw a punch. So there's probably a little bit more of a mutual respect after the altercation. You know, that's a little bit easier to get to that respect after that altercation. But as long as those two can have a working relationship, the Warriors can still be contenders in the West. Like it or not, Draymond is more important to this season than Poole. Ain't nobody guarding Kawhi. Jokic, Towns, LeBron, or AD, but Draymond come playoff time. So they need him. They need what he brings to the table. Anywho, over the offseason, the Warriors opted to bolster their team with veterans, bringing in Dante DiVincenzo, Jamichael Green, and Ryan Hollins. Now, when it comes to fantasy, Stephen Curry.
Stephen Curry, he's driving me crazy. Stephen Curry, and the Warriors.
He's a no-brainer, must-roster fantasy player. Fresh off his fourth championship, a finals MVP, and being named one of the top 75 players at the All-Star game. Oh, and just to sprinkle a little bit on top of that, he won the All-Star MVP award. For anybody else, that would be considered an exceptional year. But all his fantasy managers, all we did was moan about how last season was some of the worst shooting we've seen from Steph Curry in his career. Curry shot 44% from the field and 38% from deep. Plus, there was a reduction in his free throw attempts, going down from 5.7 to 4.3. But if you dig real deep, you realize it doesn't even matter. Throughout the COVID season where Curry only played 5 games due to injury, and last season was a career low from a percentage standpoint, especially from deep. Even with all that though, he still managed to average 4.5 three-pointers made. That had a standard deviation of 2.83.
Nerd alert!
Anything over 2 standard deviations means that you're a monster producer for that category. Basically, you're influencing that stat at the rate of 2 normal players. In Steph's case, almost 3. Even with the reduction in the free throw attempts, it wasn't enough to crater his sway on the free throw percentage category, where he had a standard deviation of 1.93.
Nerd alert!
Again, anything over 2 standard deviations is beast mode, and Curry was right at the cusp of that for free throw percentage. Just for reference, he was 2.12 standard deviations from the mean for free throw percentage in the 2020-21 season. So even a lackluster season for Curry fantasy wise, he was still dominating. Anywho, even with the Warriors wanting to use this season to give their young guys more opportunity, Curry should still be right near the top for fantasy value this season. Jordan Poole, he just received a big payday, $140 million on a 4-year extension. And this is similar to Tyler Hero, who received a $130 million extension. And I guess now we see how much it costs to sweep that punch under the rug. Just about a cool extra $10 million for hush money, it seems like. In all seriousness, though, Poole, he's been groomed to hopefully be that next guy by the time Curry decides to hang it up. And I get that he had a little bit more opportunity last season, being able to start 51 games with Klay being out for the beginning of the season, but the minutes will still be there this season. And with the Warriors having 15 back-to-backs, I don't expect Klay Thompson to play in any of those. Plus, you add in whatever rest days they feel are necessary to manage Klay Thompson, because again, he's coming off of 2 years of basically not playing basketball. So I still think that they're kind of in the ramp-up mode for Klay Thompson, honestly. And then you think Curry, he's probably going to miss anywhere from 10 to 13 games. So there should be plenty of opportunity for Poole to step in the spotlight. And with Poole being paid, now we're looking for improvement, and we're looking for that in the percentage categories. Can he get from 46 to 47% from the field? Can he get up to 38% from deep? That's what we want to see. Can he find a way to get those steals up to at least, you know, one full steal, especially now with Gary Payton the second away? You know, somebody's got to go in there and D up and cause havoc. Can he do those little things also, even after being paid? Next, we got the first-time All-Star Andrew Wiggins. He also just got paid, agreeing to a $109 million extension over 4 years. I think it was Wiggins' playoff run and what he did defensively that got him paid. In the postseason, Wiggins averaged 16.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 block, and 1.6 three-pointers made at 33%. Now, I don't think he could do this for a full season, but imagine if from your small forward position, you got 7.5 rebounds, 1 steal, and 1 block. You're talking about a Scotty Barnes type whose ADP is currently at 44, but you can get Wiggins at a 40 pick discount because his ADP is currently at 81. Last year, it was Klay Thompson's opportunity to knock off the rust after missing two full seasons due to injury. He shot career lows in the percentages, but that was to be expected, you know, just knocking off the rust. And honestly, if shooting 39% from beyond the arc is a career low, I'm sure most NBA shooters would be like, sign me up for that. I want that guy's career. That's my career low. But what we don't want to see a repeat of is the field goal percentage. That needs to be cleaned up. That was at 43% last season. And Klay, the way he shoots, he should be at least be at 46% from the field. All in all, Klay Thompson is who Klay Thompson is. He's going to give you points and threes. But unlike Jordan Poole, there's really no peripheral stats that are accompanying that box score from Klay Thompson. Plus, the fact that I believe you're only going to get probably in the mid-50 of games from this guy, so you should be drafting him with caution. Draymond Green, he's the type of player that you need if you have a certain team built for your fantasy team, because you got to have a roster that's going to cover up his deficiencies. He's going to give you high turnovers, poor percentages from deep and from the free throw line. And for the life of me, it looks like he's always passing up a scoring opportunity. It's like, I swear this dude is be passing up wide open layups at times for no reason. It's not even like a mid-range jump shot is going to be a much better shot. I understand sometimes kicking it out for the three, but like Draymond is this, he's kind of Rondo-ish when it comes to that. It's like, just shoot the ball sometimes. But last year, before the back injury, we saw a motivated Draymond. He came out trying to put up defense of the year performances, and that correlated with fantasy stats, averaging 7.3 rebounds, 7 assists, 1.3 steals, and 1.1 blocks. Of course, the punch, that looks really bad for Draymond, but it might be our dangling carrot to keep him motivated. This should be another year of motivation for Draymond to show the Warriors that, hey, I'm still good for the Warriors culture. I can be respected as a leader in the locker room. So I would think that Draymond would be on his best behavior for the rest of the season. Plus, the Warriors have sent Draymond a clear message by paying Poole and Wiggins, basically saying, hey, you got to prove your worth. You got to prove that you're worth the hassle. You got to prove that your production is worth the headache of dealing with you and all your emotions. And from Draymond's side, even if he doesn't want to prove it per se to the Warriors, he still needs to prove it to other contending teams if he's looking to re-up after this season and maybe get a little bit more long-term money by opting out of his contract come summer. The only fringe player on the roster that I got is Kevon Looney, and he's really more of an add-drop guy that you stream on nights you need rebounds, because other than the 7.3 rebounds that he provides, there's really nothing else that he brings to the table. On top of that, Looney's also in a position battle with James Wiseman. And now, Wiseman, like, I know a lot of people are high on them, but I'm not seeing it. You would think that Wiseman, with all the practice that he's done during his rehab, like, this guy would have some footwork by now in the post. Like, and I haven't seen it during the summer league and during the preseason. I know he's had a couple flashes where he, you know, scored 20 points, but then he go right back out the next game and score 6 or 8. And, like, I saw this dude try to do a baby hook, and it looked terrible. It looked like something I would do. It's like, by now, you should have some up and unders. You should have all this time that you spent rehabbing. Y'all would think you have a little bit of footwork in the post at this point, especially if you're supposed to be as gifted as the Warriors want us to believe. All that's to say, I really don't think Looney loses his spot this season to Wiseman. He might lose some minutes, but I think he'll still be the starter. I think he's still going to get anywhere from 20 to 25 minutes a night. And if that's the case, that limits the upside on Wiseman. And that's actually why my biggest bust for this team, I would have to say, is James Wiseman. Currently, he's being picked at 123, and in a 14-team league, that's round 9. And he shouldn't be going higher than Looney, whose ADP is 135. I get that people feel Wiseman has more upside, but again, both players, they're most likely going to be free agency ads at best. I just don't see enough minutes for both of them to really provide you what you're looking for fantasy-wise. It'd be different if Wiseman was more like a Mo Bamba type where, hey, okay, even in limited minutes, if I'm getting 20 to 24 minutes a night, I could still give you a block and a half and pull down 7 rebounds. Wiseman hasn't really shown that proclivity to get blocks or anything like that. He just seems to be able to be an uber athlete on offense, rim runner, and you hope that he could be a better rebounder than what he's shown so far. My possible breakout, I got to give that to Andrew Wiggins. He's currently has an ADP of 81, and I like his chances of playing 70 plus games this season. On top of that, he's shown fantasy managers during the Warriors playoff run that he has another gear. There's something else that he can get to. He's not just who he's always been for fantasy. So there's a track opportunity that I see for him to become a top 50 player. Our next team is the LA Clippers, who went 42-40, which led them to an 8th place finish. But even with two chances, they couldn't get out of the play-in tournament as they lost to the T-Wolves and then to the Pelicans. But to be fair to the Clippers, Paul George did catch COVID and missed the game versus the Pelicans. In the offseason, one of the deepest teams in the league just got deeper as they added John Wall and Moses Brown to the squad. So the rotations will probably just get that more convoluted. Let me go ahead and play some audio for you here.
Listen, Kawhi is the number one, and I'm totally fine with that. I think I tried to, compliment him with being able to take the load off of him. You know, everybody say, you know, Kawhi, you are 1-1, 1-A, 1-B. I'll publicly say, you know, I'm the two. You know, Kawhi's the one, I'm the two. So that part we nipped in the bud. Like, there's no ego when it comes to that.
I know Paul George said he's the number two, but for fantasy purposes, as I stated in the Top 16 podcast, he's the one that should provide the most fantasy value. Now, last season, Paul George missed a ton of time due to an elbow injury. PG-13, he's never really been a wildly efficient shooter, but with the elbow healthy now, you'd hope that he clean up some of that volume shooting that tanked the field goal percentage for fantasy managers. If he could raise that up from 42% to maybe 45%, now we're a lot more comfortable with possibly drafting this guy at the end of first rounds. It will also be interesting to see if his assists drop this season. The fact that he's averaged over 5 assists the past 2 seasons is a part of what gave PG borderline first round value. And of course the steals too, but I just want to focus on the assists right now. You got Reggie Jackson, who averages 4 to 4.5 assists. Kawhi averages 5 to 5.5. And then John Wall, who we will get to a little bit later, but he's probably in a limited role going to average somewhere around 6.5 assists. So there's a lot of playmakers on this team. And if Paul George can find his way to keep that assist in that 5 range, he will continue to provide immense value to his fantasy managers. Kawhi Leonard.
I'm a fun guy.
He gives you everything PG-13 does, but with better percentages and a little less from beyond the arc. We all understand that Kawhi is a first round talent. The only thing that you were really debating is the concern that Kawhi is going to miss games. As a Clipper, Kawhi has played 57 games, but that was in a COVID shortened season, so that was 57 out of 72 possible games. Then he played 52 games, and finally he missed all of last season. So I'd bet the under for 60 games played when it comes to Kawhi, and that's really where you have to decide if he's worth the price of a second round pick, because his ADP is currently at pick 25. And it's probably pretty close, because if you look at guys within that same range, would I rather Domantas Sabonis? Yeah, I think I'd take Sabonis over Kawhi. Donovan Mitchell? Nah. Fred VanVleet? I'd probably go for Fred VanVleet over Kawhi. Rudy Gobert? Nah, I'd take Kawhi. Pascal Siakam? It's close, but I think I'd rather Siakam. So, you know, he's right in that group of guys that are all kind of going at the middle to end of second round. So I think second round value is pretty on par for Kawhi Leonard. Ivica Zubac is the only big on this squad, but Coach Ty Lue likes running out lineups with Robert Covington at the 5. And with Kawhi back in the lineup, I can see Lue running out lineups where it's Jackson, Norman Powell, PG, Kawhi, Marcus Morris. So I think that Lou's going to do a lot of mix and matching. And he seems to be okay. I think he just likes testing out lineups during the regular season. But I bring that up because I don't see a path to 30 minutes for Zubac. And that seems to be that magic number where his value would just skyrocket. Last season, Zubac had 26 games where he played 27 minutes or more. And over those 26 games, he averaged 30 minutes a night and produced 13.3 points, 10.8 rebounds, and 1.7 blocks while shooting 67% from the field. That takes him from being a guy that people dismiss to the Clint Capella, Wendell Carter Jr. types. And they're going on average 25 spots higher in the draft. The Clippers are probably one of the deeper teams, but I like Norman Powell the most from the bench unit. I'm not too worried about his minutes because he'll be backing up both PG and Kawhi. So you figure between the both of those guys, he's probably going to have about 22 to 25 minutes off the bench, and then an extra 5 to 7 minutes when Powell is sharing the court with both Kawhi and PG. Also, Powell's never been a high volume shooter, so he should be able to get in where he fits in and maintain his scoring average. The issue with Powell is if he's not scoring, he really doesn't provide much else for fantasy. Even for a shooting guard, he has terribly low averages for rebounds, assists, and steals. This team's fringe players are Reggie Jackson, Robert Covington, Marcus Morris, and John Wall. And Sir Covington, he's a guy that I think most managers will stream into their lineups at some point. I love guys like him. He's one of those guys I like to call triple ones. That's a guy that will get you one steal, one block, and one three-pointer made. Anything extra from these guys is just icing on the cake. Last season, when Covington played in limited minutes, 20 minutes or less, he was able to average 6.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, 1.1 steals, 0.9 blocks, and 1.4 three-pointers made at 38%. The position battle we want to watch is between Reggie Jackson and John Wall. I don't think we'll like how this plays out for Jackson, but as of right now, he's the starting point guard. If we think back to when he was in a minute share with Patrick Beverley in the 2020-21 season, he averaged 10.7 points, 3.1 assists, and 1.8 three-pointers made at 43%. John Wall has been MIA, but he's been healthy, and he should make it even harder on the coaching staff to play Reggie Jackson than Patrick Beverley did. So I just don't believe Jackson's going to be worth a roster spot on most fantasy teams. But he's not my biggest bust. My biggest bust, I have to go with Norman Powell. I don't have much disagreement with the ADP for Powell. It's at pick 124. That's the 9th round. But as I stated before, if he's not scoring, where is he providing value? Because this team is super deep. I think there's going to be a lot of nights where Norman Powell doesn't even score double digits. And when he's not giving you 15, 16 points, 2.5 threes, there's really nothing else that he's providing for fantasy teams. The guy with the potential to break out, I'm going to go with John Wall. I think at some point he wins the starting role, and I think that he can get to about 28 minutes a night.
Nerd alert!
In those 28 minutes, let's say Wall gets up to 12.5 field goal attempts. And he's always been a terrible shooter, so let's say he's shooting around 42%. Well, that's 10.6 points just off of field goals. He shot the three ball a little bit better as he's been aging, but you assume that with Kawhi and PG on the floor, a lot more of those attempts will be open. So let's say he gets to about 1.3 three-pointers made. And if you lump those attempts into his field goal attempts, that's another probably 1.1 points average added to his average. So now we're at 11.7. Lastly, if you're keeping up with the math, you want to do the free throw attempts. And that will probably drop because John Wall, he's a step slower. He's not going to be as ball dominant as he once was. So if he ends up at 3.5 attempts now from the charity stripe with the career average of 77%, that's an additional 2.7 points. And so now we got a points per game average of 14.4.
Nerd alert!
All that's to get to my point. if Wall is averaging 14.5 points, 3.5 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 1 steal, and 1.3 3-pointers made, well, gee golly, you know, now we got a guy that's a top 100 person, and he's kind of comparable to a Marcus Smart type. Let's go ahead and take a quick break here, and when we get back, we'll continue to discuss the rest of the teams in the Pacific Division. We're picking back up with the Los Angeles Lakers, who went 33-49 and finished in an embarrassing 11th place. And it almost felt like the Lakers took their foot off the gas on purpose to avoid the play-in tournament. And it's like they just didn't want to get embarrassed in case they got in and lost, I feel like. But it's crazy, this meandering and mediocrity that the Lakers is doing. It's not even fun as a Laker hater to cheer for it. It's like, I don't even want to watch the nonsense that this Laker team wants to call management. But the management did realize they had a problem in the offseason, and they basically reflipped their whole roster. Lakers were one of the busier teams in the offseason, adding Thomas Bryant, Damian Jones, Lonnie Walker IV, Juan Toscano-Anderson, and Scottie Pippen Jr. But there's just not a lot of talent on this team. You know, the must-roster players start and end with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Everybody else is suspect. It's add and drop. But if we look at LeBron James, and see what happened to him last year, he failed to pick 27, and managers regretted that decision. LeBron went on to average 30.3 points, 8.2 rebounds, 6.2 assists, 1.3 steals, 1.1 blocks, and 2.9 3-pointers made at 36%. At this point, we just need to stop discounting Bron, because he's not going to fall off a cliff anytime soon due to his age. It just doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. And even if everything falls apart for another season for the Lakers, we at least know LeBron will be motivated to break Kareem's scoring record while doing it in a Lakers jersey. You know, add a little extra poetry to the whole situation. As for Anthony Street Clothes Davis,
I call him Anthony Street Clothes Davis because he's always in street clothes.
Unfortunately, it's going to take AD some time to lose that moniker, but I hope he's heard all the noise and he feels like he has something to prove this season. And I get it, AD, he's had legit injuries over the past few seasons, but even before that, it always seemed like he was leaving games early, getting nicked up, you know, leaving for a quarter, coming back, you know, playing a half, sitting out the rest of the game. So I just think he has a low pain tolerance, you know, because he always seems to be having some type of issue, even if it's not a long-term injury. But after we get past the availability issue, the next thing fantasy managers want to see is if he can take control and be that number one option for the Lakers. He's going to be 29 this season, and he should be at the peak of his powers. According to a recent report, Coach Darvin Ham is looking to put him in the best spot to succeed, and that's playing center. But I want you guys to listen to a quote from AD.
At this point, yeah, I said that in 19. Since 19, AD's at the five. So. I mean, but it's what it is. At the end of the day, we're trying to win basketball games, and if that's the best situation for us to win basketball games, then, you know, that's what we'll look at. I think he's still trying to figure out the rotations as well. And right now it looks good when I'm at the five. That's really it. And like I said, if I have to play the five, then I mean, it's totally fine. I don't care the way our defense is set up. You know, we all help each other. And that's what it is. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I trust, you know, coach's decision. I mean, I'm pretty sure he heard, you know, AD wants to play the four, so he know where I stand. But at the end of the day, like, I want to win. So that's me playing the five, then that's what it's going to be.
Now, there's a little bit of mixed message in here, because on one hand, he said that the quote about him wanting to play power forward was from when he was 19, and he's just all about doing what it takes for his team to win. But then he comes back around and he double downs and refers to himself in the third person like he team proof for somebody and says, I'm pretty sure he, and he's referring to Darvin Ham, heard AD wants to play the four. So he knows where I stand.
Come on, man. I mean, come on, man. Come on, man. You're making money. Come on. I mean, come on, man. Come on.
All we could do is hope that AD embraces the role and replicates what he was able to do in the bubble playoffs, where he averaged 27.7 points, 9.7 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1.2 steals, 1.4 blocks, and 1.1 three-pointers made for a full season. And remember, what he did in the bubble, he did as a center, playing the center all through the playoff run. The fringe rosterable players for this team, we got Russell Westbrook, Patrick Beverley, Dennis Schroeder, Damian Jones, and Thomas Bryant. Westbrook, of course, is the most interesting guy of this group. Last season, Westbrook went in the second round to Pippen them, but this year, his ADP is at 96, and that's round 7. And that's a steep drop-off in perceived value. Part of the reason that value has dropped amongst fantasy managers is because he was terrible last season. I mean, you had NBA players Patrick Beverley and Karl-Anthony Towns literally joking on the floor during a live ball when Westbrook threw up bricks. So, I mean, the disrespect was at an all-time high for Westbrook. But he deserved it. He was playing terrible. Part of the reason his value is so low is that everybody believes that if he stays as a Laker, he's probably going to come off the bench. And Darvin Ham, he tried to test this out, announcing that Westbrook would come off the bench in the last preseason game. But guess what happened? Westbrook played 5 minutes and then he suffered some mysterious strain for his hamstring. Westbrook wants no part of doing what it takes to raise his value among the NBA. And he's heading down the path that Carmelo Anthony was at, where he's going to basically get blackballed from the league. Nobody's going to want him. The final reason why I think Westbrook's perceived value is at an all-time low is his fantasy floor can literally be nothing. Zero. It can get to the point where the Lakers just ask him to go home. So for all those reasons, I'm staying far, far away from Westbrook and fantasy drafts. We got a few position battles going on for this team. We'll start with the quartet battle, in a sense, and that's Russell Westbrook, Dennis Schroeder, Patrick Beverley, and Kendrick Nunn. And they're all fighting for backcourt minutes. I think the Lakers want to start Patrick Beverley, so him and Nunn probably really aren't in that much of a battle. But Beverley, he's another one of those kind of triple one guys that I just love to stream. He's almost a little bit more valuable to me because he does it as a guard. Plus, he provides a nice handful of assists. Last season, his averages were 9.2 points, 4.1 rebounds, 4.5 assists, and here comes the triple one that we were discussing, 1.2 steals, almost a full block at 0.9, and 1.4 three-pointers made at 34%. As we discussed, Westbrook, he looks like, in a best-case scenario, he's heading to the bench, but he'll probably have, well, he'll have a little bit of runway because we heard that Schroeder is going to have thumb surgery and he's probably going to miss 4 weeks. So that's probably the first 10 games of the season for the Lakers. So Westbrook can use this time to really put his best foot forward and show the coaching staff that he's going to do what it takes and kind of keep his fantasy value. But if he's not able to change his game, it could be a long season for managers that are rostering Westbrook. From Schroeder's point of view, he's already proved that he's a good fit with LeBron and AD. Back in the 2021 season, he averaged 15.4 points, 3.5 rebounds, 5.8 assists, 1.1 steals, and 1.2 three-pointers made at 34%. So he's just waiting for opportunity to get his shine back because nothing to really do with fantasy, but I know that man is still hurting about turning down that $70 million extension. Another position battle is between Thomas Bryant and Damian Jones. But if Anthony Davis is going to be playing the five, these guys are really just fighting it out over 20, 25 minutes max. I thought Bryant would win out since, to me, theoretically, he's a better floor spacer. But it looks like Damian Jones will get the first crack of being the backup center and possibly getting spot starts at center, depending on who the opponent is. last season, when he got minutes, he was kind of an end-of-the-bench fantasy player. In 24 games where he played 20 minutes or more, he was able to average a total of 27 minutes a night and produce 12.8 points, 6.5 rebounds, and 1.1 blocks. Biggest bust, I think it's obvious Westbrook would be my biggest bust. He seems like a clear candidate for this scenario. Again, because his floor could be zero, absolutely nothing. Right now, again, his ADP is 96. And it really doesn't matter what his ADP is. The issue is Westbrook could literally get sent home. And if that's the case, you just wasted a draft pick, regardless if it's in the later rounds or not, on a guy that may not even make it through the whole season. And it's not due to some type of injury or something. My possible breakout candidate, I have to go in the exact opposite direction, and that's Westbrook's counterpart, Dennis Schroeder, and he's being picked at 138 on average. And there's a path to minutes for Schroeder. Even without Westbrook being sent home, there's a path for minutes for Schroeder. So he's a guy that has a lot more upside in those later rounds if you're willing to wait it out to see what happens between him and Westbrook. But definitely whenever we get a report that Westbrook is getting sent home, if we ever do get it, and that opens up 30 minutes plus for Schroeder, oh, he's going to be one of the hottest pickups in fantasy. The Phoenix Suns finished their season 64-18, and that was for the best record in the West, which also happened to be the best record in the league. The problem is we last saw them getting utterly destroyed in a closeout game 7 to get to the conference finals. On top of that, they had a sloppy offseason, spurning their star center, DeAndre Ayton, by not offering him a max deal. Then their owner was forced to sell off the team after the NBA's internal investigation was completed. And actually, that really wasn't due to the NBA investigation. That was more due to public pressure after everything was verified from the Baxter Holmes story in ESPN. But either way, the point is, owner chaos in the front office, owner having to sell the team. Jay Crowder, he's asked out because he thinks he's too good to come off the bench. And they lost their first preseason game to the Adeline 36ers, who aren't even an NBA team. The vibes coming out of Phoenix, they just aren't good. New to the team, Damian Lee, Jock Lando, DeJuan Washington Jr., and Josh Okigie. And those are guys that they're just going to be looking for small roles on this team. This team pretty much has its 8-9-man rotation already, and they know who they want to ride with going into the playoffs. So I don't see how they're going to really help the culture any, but you never know. They could be good locker room guys and hopefully help change some things around. But when we look at fantasy value, Devin Booker should lead this team. With a pouty Ayton and an aging Chris Paul, Booker should be the logical choice to determine this team's identity on offense. I would love to see Booker get his assists back up. In the 2 seasons prior to CP3's arrival, Booker averaged 6.6 assists. And I'm not even asking him to get back to that high amount of assists. If he can just get to 5 to 5.5 assists, we're talking about a guy averaging 26 points, 5 rebounds, 5.5 assists, 1 steals, and 2.5 three-pointers made. With those stats, that's easily a reason to see why Booker could have first-round potential. Chris Paul, he may not be the scorer that he once was, but last season was his 17th year in the NBA, and he was still able to play 65 games and lead the league in assists, averaging 10.8. Only CP3 and James Harden were able to average double-digit assists last season. Now, over the last 2 seasons for CP3, his points per game have dropped, going from 17.6 to 16.4, and then from 16.4 to 14.7. Plus, CP3 basically shit the bed in the playoffs after he turned 37. In those 5 games after his birthday, he averaged 9.4 points, 3.4 rebounds, 5.8 assists, 1.2 steals, and 1.6 three-pointers made at 50%. And the reason why it was so crazy and everybody made a big deal about it was because in the 8 playoff games leading up to CP's birthday, he averaged 22.6 points, 4.6 rebounds, 9.9 assists, 1.6 steals, and 1.4 three-pointers made at 33%. But if Booker's going to take that leap that I expect him to, especially during the regular season, that means CP3 has to reduce his impact a little bit. I think CP3 averages 13.5 points, 7 assists, 1.3 steals, and 1.3 three-pointers made. And that's comparable stats to a guy like Kyle Lowry. With CP3 having an ADP, though, of 35 and Lowry at an ADP at 104, I'd much rather wait to get Lowry with the discount. DeAndre Ayton worries me just because I don't know if his heart is in it this season. He came to media day stating that he hadn't talked with Coach Monty Williams since the season ended. And again, the vibes are just bad on this team, and I just don't like it. But even with all that concern, and even though I don't really like his game, he's more of a finesse guy that there's a couple times in the playoffs where nobody was around Ayton, or it was a small guy under Ayton and he wouldn't dunk it. He tried to do a little jump hook and miss it. He's just a little too finesse for me. But regardless of that, for fantasy purposes, he's still a walking double-double. So it's just something to watch. He's got his money. He's not happy there. Last year, it seemed like there was a couple moments where he was kind of throwing a hissy fit and, you know, taking some time away from the team, extending a minor injury and things of that nature. Does that spill out onto the court during the regular season? You know, I wouldn't expect a guy like him to do that in playoffs on the biggest stage, but during the regular season, it's a long season. You get tired of folks. You tired of Chris Paul yapping at you all day. Can we see some hissy fits from Ayton? That I want to watch, but it's unlikely to really negatively impact your fantasy game. With Miles Bridges, what you gotta like most about him and his fantasy game is that he has strong percentages. 53% from the field for a small forward is excellent. 37% from deep is strong. 83% from the charity stripe, that's very strong, positive impact from the line. Everything else about his game is kind of blah. You know, 14.2 points, blah. 4.2 rebounds for a small forward, blah. It's not bad, but doesn't really stand out. 1.2 steals, that's actually pretty good, regardless of his position. So I'll give him credit there. And 1.4 three-pointers made. At this point in this NBA, that's kind of blah also. If you're getting over two, now you're like, okay, you got a little bit of impact. Anything over three, now we're like, all right, you're big time producer in that category. I think Bridges' value really comes from the fact that he doesn't hurt you anywhere, and all of his stats are pretty much useful for fantasy managers. There just aren't any eye-popping upside to the guy, though. Next up, we got Cameron Johnson, and as a starter, he's very intriguing this season. As a starter last season, he only started in 16 games, but in those 16 games, he averaged 33 minutes and produced 16.3 points, 4.9 rebounds, 1.1 steals, and 3.1 three-pointers made at 42%, while shooting 49% on 11.4 field goal attempts. So, like Bridges, Johnson just really doesn't hurt you anywhere with his production. And as we just talked about earlier, you're looking at the 3.1 three-pointers made at 42%. Excellent volume from the three-point line, excellent percentage from the three-point line. So killing two categories for you right there. As we move down the Phoenix roster, there's really not a lot of value after that. Dario Saric could probably be one of those fringe rosterable players. With no Jay Crowder, he should have first crack at the backup power forward in center minutes. I can see him averaging up to 25 minutes a night. I don't really see anything over that. But in those 25 minutes a night, I would project 13.5 points, 5 rebounds, a steal, 1.5 three-pointers made. And for a power forward center, it's useful. You could use it. I don't think you just want to, you know, carry it all season. But I could see a lot of people just picking them up, riding them for a few games, dropping him back on the free agency. So he's most likely a guy that most people may stream throughout the season, especially if he's been able to work himself back to the guy he was before the injury. No real position battle for the Phoenix Suns. Phoenix chose Cameron Johnson over Jay Crowder to start at the power forward position. That was probably really the only battle going into training camp. But of course, when Jay Crowder got that news, they came up to him, let him know what he was most likely going to see this season. Crowder refused to go to training camp. So, again, first off, Crowder, he's not good enough to make trade demands and not show up to camp. He's not that type of player. He's a well-respected player. People want him on his teams. He's on a great contract, so I'm sure teams want him. But for you to just try to ask out like, you know, Phoenix needs to accommodate you. If I was the GM, James Jones, I wouldn't accommodate you. I'd just tell you, go ahead, go home. If you don't really want to be here, just sit at home and possibly I could probably find you where you're not collecting checks. So that's up to you. So either way, I guess my point is, I don't think we should expect to see Phoenix rush in to trade great Jay Crowder. If, you know, a great deal comes across their lap, then obviously they're going to take it for a guy that they're not using. But I don't just see them going out there actively trying to move him as soon as possible and get him to a place that he wants to be. You know, they're just going to probably take whatever deal works best for them. I don't even think they're going to consider his feelings or him trying to play for a possible contender or whatever the case may be. Especially when Phoenix is still contending for, they still have their championship window open at this time. So why would you want to bolster another contending team? That really doesn't make sense unless the deal just kind of blows you away. And for fantasy purposes, he was just a borderline rosterable guy anyway, so no loss there. For that reason, I got to continue with Jay Crowder as my biggest bust because he has an ADP of 135. Crowder doesn't provide a lot of long-term value in fantasy, so he really shouldn't be on rosters anyway. And on top of the fact that he may never play this season, it just seems like a waste of a pick to draft Jay Crowder. Potential breakout, I'm going to go with Cameron Johnson. He's going around the same time basically as Jay Crowder with the average draft position of 131. So if he's shooting legit like we saw in the small sample size of games where he was starting, he's going to far outpace that draft position. And the last team from the Pacific Division is the Sacramento Kings, who finished the season 30-52. And it seems like the Kings is always going to be the Kings. Last year at the trade deadline, they moved Tyrese Halliburton in exchange for Domantas Sabonis. And they were hoping for one final push in order to make the play-in. Clearly, that didn't work because the Kings finished in 12th. They finished even behind the Lakers and Spurs, who were kind of actively trying to avoid the play-in down the stretch. So either way, the Kings are back at it again with their second consecutive mandate to at least make the play-in tournament. To start that process, the Kings had a busier summer than most others, bringing in Kevin Huerter, Malik Monk, Monte Dellavedova, KZ Okpala, and rookies Keegan Murray and Keon Ellis. Domantas Sabonis was able to play 13 games with De'Aaron Fox before Fox suffered a hand injury and was shut down for the season. And in terms of real basketball, the pairing resulted in a record of 5-8 over the 13 games. But for fantasy results, those were fantastic. Sabonis, he was able to maintain his value, averaging 18.1 points, 11.8 rebounds, and most importantly, he was able to maintain that 5.8 assists while shooting 55% on 13.4 field goal attempts. So as long as Sabonis is able to be the hub in an offense and provide that playmaking ability, he'll continue to be a fantasy standout. De'Aaron Fox, in those same 13 games, he played like he had something to prove to Kings fans that may have doubted management for choosing him over Tyrese Halliburton. Fox, in those 13 games, averaged 29.1 points, 3.9 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 1 steal, and 2 three-pointers made at 34% while shooting 50% from the field on 22.4 attempts and 80% from the charity stripe. That's the last piece fantasy managers were looking for from De'Aaron Fox: the ability to raise that 3-point percentage and free throw percentage. Now, honestly, the 3-point percentage still needs to get closer to about 36%, but if we're getting better percentages across the board, he's always been pretty good from the field, but if we're getting better percentages from, again, the 3-point line and the free throw line, that will really elevate Fox's value in fantasy. Harrison Barnes is basically as steady as it gets for a fantasy player. Nothing is really going to blow you away from Barnes's line. If you want to continue to look at the 13 games as a sample size for the team this season. Harrison Barnes, while playing with Sabonis and Fox on the floor together, he actually shined a little bit more than usual, averaging 17.6 points, 5.1 rebounds, and 1.6 three-pointers made at 47%, while shooting 54% on 9.5 field goal attempts and 87% on 6.7 free throw attempts. For Barnes, I think you got to hope that the Kings are feeling good about this season, and hopefully that keeps Barnes reinvigorated by playing competitive basketball games, because Lord knows the Kings are never in the mix. The rookie Keegan Murray stood out in both the California Classic Summer League and Vegas Summer League, putting together a combined average of 21.7 points, 7.6 rebounds, 1.3 steals, and 3 three-pointers made at 41%, while shooting 51% on 14.7 field goal attempts and 84% on 4.6 free throw attempts. Of course, Summer League numbers don't matter in the grand scheme of things, but it's always nice when a player performs at each level. And if anything, Keegan gave the Sacramento fans some hype about the upcoming season. Sacktown in the Bay, we take it over. We getting 40 wins this year. That man said 40 wins. He didn't even say they're gonna go 500 and get and get 41 at least. You know what I'm saying? He said 40 wins, boy. So the fans are definitely excited about this upcoming season. And the good vibes for Keegan Murray have kept rolling in the preseason, where he averaged 16 points, 4.5 rebounds, 2 steals, and 3.5 three-pointers made at 70%. So again, at each level, he's showing that he can make an impact on the floor. The only thing to do now is do it in an actual NBA game. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wait a little bit to see how that goes for Keegan, because he's in health and safety protocols.
Coronavirus! Coronavirus! Shit is real!
And he'll probably miss, again, you know, 2, maybe 3 games of the regular season. Fringe players for the Sacramento Kings, I'm looking at Kevin Huerter, Malik Monk, Davion Mitchell. This, the backcourt, is going to be a little convoluted outside of De'Aaron Fox. Huerter and Monk, they're both were brought in to provide shooting for the Kings, and they're in a position battle to fill those minutes at the shooting guard position. For real basketball, I think Huerter makes a lot more sense for the Kings. The offense between him and Monk are equal, but Herter's a better defender. Plus, for Huerter, he can kind of play up a bit on D and cover small forwards. So even if he's in, you know, a down-the-line minute share with Malik Monk at the shooting guard position, after he, you know, if he wins that starting role or not, let's say he wins the starting role, and Monk, he's probably going to at least garner 20 to 22 minutes off the bench. Being able to play up at small forward will allow him to get an extra 5 to 10 minutes a night, because you got Davion Mitchell, who's going to be playing, you know, beside Fox every once in a while. So Davion Mitchell is probably still in some of those kind of quote-unquote shooting guard minutes, playing 5 to 10 minutes next to Fox on the floor as the Kings continue to develop him and use him as a spark plug on defense. So, if Herter's playing a little bit of small forward also, when they maybe do a little bit smaller lineups, you got a guy that could hopefully stay around his average as a starter of 28 to 30 minutes a night. Biggest bust potential based on ADP has to be Rashawn Holmes. His ADP currently is at 131, and that's 10th round value. There's just no path for minutes for him, because him and Sabonis can't play on the floor together. Sabonis is not a floor spacer. Holmes is not a floor spacer. So the two can't coexist on the floor together. So if Holmes is strictly going to be playing backup five this season, that means that he's probably only averaging 15 to 18 minutes a night. And in limited minutes last season, where Rashawn Holmes played 18 minutes or less, he averaged 4.3 points and 4.1 rebounds. That's not even a guy that you really want to stream. That's like desperate situations that you're looking to put Holmes in the lineup. So he's just not a guy that you're going to roster. He's not worth a pick. And again, I know in the 10th round, you're at those final 3 rounds, hey, you're probably not going to keep most of the players at the end of your bench anyways long term. But that's not even a good flyer to waste on Holmes. Possible breakout candidate, I'm going to go ahead and select the rookie Keegan Murray. His ADP is at pick 97. And Keegan, he's an older rookie. He's already 22. And I know you can't put too much weight into summer league and preseason, but it seems that Keegan is NBA ready. And you hope that that age allows him to come in and play winning basketball right away, because his team is looking to get in that play-in. And I doubt the coach, Mike Brown, is really going to want to waste time on developing. So the fact that he's a little older, can come in, understand, pick things up probably a lot faster. His body is a little bit more mature to handle the rigors of the NBA. He might be able to just step right in and be productive. Now, Tobias Harris is known as a born fantasy player. But for a rookie, if he can make his stats comparable to Harris and is averaging around 16 points, 6 rebounds, 1 steal, we know he can shoot the 3. So if he can get up to about 2 three-pointers made, you're looking at a guy that could possibly break into the top 75 as a rookie. And that's great value, because unfortunately, for as good as rookies are, even the ones that are scoring 20 points a night, their percentages are usually bad. They usually have high turnovers. So their counting stats are nice for fantasy, but their overall value really isn't as high as we perceive it to be, because they're just killing you in so many other categories that count towards winning in this game. So that's it, y'all. The season again right around the corner. I'm excited.
I am so excited!
And we just gonna have to get into it. So I'm gonna see you guys again soon as the season starts. You know, try to keep providing these podcasts. Remember, you could download these podcasts on Spotify. I'm on Stitcher. I'm in iTunes. You can basically get this podcast anywhere that you play podcasts at. So if you're somebody like me, I like to play my podcast at, you know, 1.6, 1.7 speed, at the very least 1.5. So, you know, you can burn through these podcasts a lot faster while you're working or doing whatever you're doing. But as always, however you're listening, whenever you're listening, I appreciate you spending part of your day to talk about fantasy with me. And we're going to go ahead and get out of here.
Oh my God! Oh! Shut it down! Oh!